The previous Mishnah taught that the cheese which is owned by a non-Jew is forbidden for a Jew to eat, although it is permitted for him to benefit from that cheese. For example, he could sell the cheese to a non-Jew and benefit from the money. Nevertheless, it's forbidden to consume that cheese. The question is, why? Omar Rabbi Yehuda said, Shal Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yeshua, K'shoyim halchen baderech, when they were going on a journey, they were walking together. And Omar Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yeshua, B'mnei ma asu gvinas agoyim, why did the Chachomim forbid a Jew to eat cheese which comes from a non-Jew, which was owned by a non-Jew? It had only been recently decreed by the Chachomim of that generation that Midrabonon is forbidden for somebody to consume cheese which comes from a non-Jew, and Rabbi Yishmael wanted to know why. Now, in order to go through the process of making cheese, the rennet, which is a certain substance which comes from the stomach of an animal, is needed. Now, at least with the technology and the processing which they had in the times of the Mishnah, only specific types of rennet which came from specific animals worked to turn the milk into cheese for this purpose. And interestingly, all of the animals which could be used were kosher animals, which means that any cheese which you would find must have been kosher. At least in terms of the rennet of the cheese must have come from a kosher animal. And if so, why is any cheese which belongs to a non-Jew forbidden to eat? Oh my lord, Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Ishmael, because they use the rennet which comes from the stomach of a nevela in order to produce the cheese, to make the milk harden by using that rennet. A nevela is an animal which could be kosher, but it's an animal which has died without having received proper valid shechita, a valid slaughtering, and it's forbidden to eat any of that animal. And what Rabbi Yishmael was suggesting, what Rabbi Yeshua was suggesting is that the rennet is considered to be a part of the animal, such that the prohibition of eating a nevela applies to the rennet as well. So concerned that the non-Jews produce the cheese by using the rennet of a nevela animal, and therefore will be forbidden. Omar Loi, Rabbi Yishmael said Rabbi Yeshua, I'm going to prove to you that the rennet is not considered to be such an intrinsic part of the animal that it will be included in the prohibition of the nevela. V'haloi kevas oila chamura mekevas nevela. Surely the stomach, the rennet which comes from the stomach of a oila, a korban which is totally burnt on the Mizbeach, and it's the entire animal is burnt on the Mizbeach, and it's forbidden to benefit from any part of that animal. It's designated totally to be burnt on the Mizbeach, and the prohibition of benefiting from a korban oila is more strict than the prohibition of consuming the rennet which comes from a nevela. Why is that? Because a korban oila is forbidden to even benefit from, whereas a nevela is only forbidden to eat. V'omru, now the Chachom said that the law is that Kohen Shedai Teyofa Sorfa Chaya. A Kohen who has a particular mind, a Kohen who is not disgusted by eating a rennet by itself, by eating the rennet which comes from the stomach by itself, he's able to swallow and eat up the rennet of a Korban Oila raw. He could also cook it and eat it. Just there was a technical problem that in the Beis Hamikdash there was nothing which could cook something which was milky. All of the pots and utensils in the Beis Hamikdash were meaty. But the point is that it is permitted to even consume the rennet of a korban oila. So we see that the rennet is not considered to be like a part of the rest of the animal, which is forbidden totally to even benefit from. So all the more so in the case of a nevela, which is less stringent than a korban oila, we're not going to consider the rennet to be a part of the rest of the animal. Now the Mishnah adds that in brackets, sort of. This is not part of Rabbi Yishmael's argument, but in brackets the Mishnah tells us that v'loy haidulay, the Aruch HaChomim did not agree with this halacha, that it's permitted for a kohen to eat the rennet of a korban oila. However, Aval Omru, but they did say that Einen, and it's forbidden to benefit from even the rennet of a korban oila, v'loy mayalin, but one who does benefit from it will not violate the prohibition of me'ila, which is when one benefits from something which is designated to the Beis HaMikdash, and there are certain punishments which follow. But we see that even according to the Chachomim, one does not violate Me'ila when he benefits from this, which shows us that the entire prohibition is only Midrabanan. So even this opinion agrees that essentially the rennet is not considered part of the rest of the animal. Just for whatever reason, they said that the Midrabanan it's forbidden to eat it. So you can't tell me that the reason why cheese belonging to a non-Jew is forbidden is because they might have used the rennet of a nevela. The rennet is not considered to be a part of the rest of the animal. So the prohibition of nevela would not apply to the rennet. Oh my lord, Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Shmuel, you're right, it's actually a different reason. Why is the cheese belonging to a non-Jew forbidden? Because they use the rennet, which comes from the stomach of calves, which were sacrificed for Avodah Zarah, in order to produce the cheese. And that's all we're concerned about. Oh my lord, Rabbi Shmuel said to Rabbi Yeshua, Im Kain, if that's the case, then Lomalei Asarua Bahanoa. Why didn't the Chachom say that it's forbidden to even benefit from the cheese of non-Jews? If the concern is that it comes from an animal which was used for Avodah Zarah, so it's forbidden to even benefit from it, as we've seen extensively throughout the past few Mishnayos. But the cheese, it's permitted to benefit from, it's only forbidden to eat it. So that also can't be the real reason. And at this point, the Mishnah says very interestingly, Hisir Dabar Acher. Rabbi Shmuel directed the conversation to something else. He avoided the topic. And we'll explain why in a moment, but what did he say to him? Omar Loi, Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Shmuel, Yishmuel Achi, Yishmuel my brother, Heoch Ato Kore, how do you read the following pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which begins, Yishokei Minashikos Piu, that part of the pasuk that the Mishnah doesn't bring, which means that he should kiss me from the kisses of his mouth. The entire Shir HaShirim is all about the awesome love between Hashem and the Jewish people. And that pasuk continues, Ki Tovim Doidecha Miyoyin. Because your beloved is even better than wine. So one way of reading the pasuk is like that. Oy ki tovim deidayich. Or do you read the pasuk that your beloved one is better than wine, but in a feminine form? Deidecha, your beloved is masculine, and in that case it would be referring to Hashem. Shir HaShirim is really a parable of a man and a woman, a husband and wife, who have such great love towards each other, and that is compared to the love of Hashem and the Jewish people. So in the parable, the man is Hashem and the woman is the Jewish people. So if you read the pasuk, that it's talking in the masculine form, then it's the Jewish people talking to Hashem, how much we love Hashem. But if you read it in the feminine form, then it's Hashem talking towards us, how much he loves us. And the whole of Shir HaShirim is full of both directions. The question is regarding this pasuk. Oh my lord, Rabbi Shmuel said to Rabbi Yeshua, Ki tovim deidayich. I read it in the feminine form, that it's Hashem talking to us, how much Hashem loves us. Oh my lord, Rabbi Shmuel said to him, Ein hadavar kein. That is not the case. Shari chaveir melamed olav, because the next pasuk right after that shows us otherwise, because the next pasuk says, L'reach shmonecha tovim. Your oil has a good scent. Either way, whatever the translation is, there it's certainly in the masculine form, that we're talking to Hashem. So therefore the previous pasuk is presumably also us talking to Hashem. Now, why exactly did Rabbi Yeshua want to avoid the subject, and why did he avoid the subject by talking about this pasuk, which seemingly has nothing to do with anything? The answer is, the enactment of the Chachomim to forbid the Jewish people from eating the cheese belonging to a non-Jew was very new. In fact, that year they had decreed it. And there's a general rule that the Chachomim, when they make a decree, they don't reveal the reason behind the decree until enough time has passed for the decree to have been accepted by the Jewish people and for them to start practicing by it. Because otherwise, if somebody hears the reason, they might say, oh, the reason is not relevant, and hey, there's an exception, and they won't come to take the decree seriously. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua didn't reveal the reason to him. And the reason why he directed him to the pasuk in Shir HaShirim is because one of the deep understandings of that pasuk is that the Jewish people are talking to Hashem and saying that your beloved, which could be a hint to the Chachomim, the leaders of the Jewish people, is better than the wine, and the wine is a parable for the laws and the mitzvahs of the Torah. So it's as if we're saying that the words of the Talmidei Chachomim and our leaders are even more beloved to us than the mitzvahs of the actual Torah. The point being that we understand that there's always a deep reason behind what the Talmidei Chachomim was saying, and even if we don't understand it, we are still going to go by it out of our great love for the Torah and the Talmidei Chachomim. We're going to accept their decrees even without understanding the real reason. The Gemara itself does give a couple of reasons for the prohibition of the Chachomim of cheeses which belong to non-Jews, but that is not the focus of the Mishnah. In fact, the Mishnah is really trying to say the opposite, that we don't necessarily need to know the reason, at least soon after the decree was made. Mishnah Vav. Earlier on in this perek, the Mishnah listed all of the things which belong to non-Jews which are forbidden to benefit from, and now, the following things which belong and come from non-Jews are forbidden. However, the prohibition is not a prohibition to benefit from the item. It's only forbidden to eat that item. just like what we've been discussing in the last two Mishnayos, which is the cheese of a non-Jew. So what else is on the list? Cholov shechalov v'goy v'ein yisrael re'ehu. Milk, which was milked from an animal, let's say from a cow, by a non-Jew, without a Jew supervising and looking over him. There is a concern that he might have added some non-kosher milk into the mixture, and this is known as cholov akum. V'hapas, v'hashemen shalahen. Bread and oil, which belongs to the non-Jews, was forbidden by the Chachomim because of what is known as chasnus. Chasnus refers to things which were prohibited in Drabonon in order to avoid people getting too close to the non-Jews, which might lead to chas v'sholem, them intermarrying with the non-Jews. So the Chachom instituted certain things to avoid us getting too close to them at all, and to mix in social gatherings, for example, where we eat bread, which is a basic food, and oil, which is also a basic substance added to many foods, to avoid us being too close to the non-Jews, and then running into the risk of getting very close and intermarrying. They prohibited certain things, and these are two examples. However, the Mishnah notes that Rebbe Ubeis Dinai, Rebbe, referring to Rebbe Yehuda Hanossi, who put together all of the Mishnah, him, together with his base then, permitted the decree against oil for an interesting reason, that they saw that it wasn't accepted by the Jewish people. It didn't become regular practice, and people continued to use the oil which came from non-Jews, and since it wasn't accepted, so Rebbe and his base then actually cancelled that decree midrabbanan. Apparently it was too much for the general populace to take on. Alright, the list continues. What else is forbidden to eat which come when it belongs to a non-Jew? A shalokos, something which was cooked by a non-Jew. This is also known as bishul akum. And it's also because of chasnus, to avoid us getting too close to the non-Jews, which might chas v'sholem lead to intermarrying with them. Uchvoshim shedagonosis seichon yayim v'chaymetz. Pickled foods, which were occasionally mixed with wine or vinegar. There's a concern that it was indeed mixed with wine or vinegar, which would prohibit it. However, since this is only a concern that perhaps there is wine there, and in addition to that, even if there is wine, the taste of the wine cannot be felt or tasted at all. Because of that, it's not forbidden to benefit from it, it's only forbidden to eat it. The toris terufa, chopped up toris, which is a load of quite small fish, which were usually chopped up into very small pieces, but once they were chopped up, it's no longer clear whether the fish had fins and scales. And perhaps mixed in with this toris is another non-kosher fish which doesn't have fins and scales. You can no longer tell. So if you can no longer tell whether this entire fish comes from a kosher fish which had fins and scales, it will be forbidden to eat it. Vitzir, and fish brine, the juice of a fish, she'ein bo dog or kilbis she'tetes boy, that doesn't have a type of extremely small fish known as a kilbis floating around in that brine. A kilbis is a type of small fish which would float around and often be found in brine which came from a kosher fish, but never in brine of a non-kosher fish. So if the brine does not have these very small kilbis fish floating around in that brine, then we would have no proof that the brine is from a kosher fish. So you can't just assume that it comes from a kosher fish. Even if a non-Jew tells you, you cannot rely on him, and therefore it will be forbidden. The chilok, a young type of fish, which only developed fins and scales when it got a bit older. So even if you know that you can identify this particular fish as a chilok, which is kosher, since it does end up getting fins and scales, already from now it's kosher, it's nevertheless forbidden, midrabbanan, in case mixed together with those fish will be another non-kosher fish which doesn't have fins and scales, but you won't be able to tell, since it's mixed up with all of these fish, which also don't have fins and scales. Alright, next one on the list, the kurechel chiltis, a small piece of chiltis, which is a plant which has a very sharp taste, and it was cut into very small pieces with a knife. And we're concerned that the knife which the non-Jew used had also been used to cut things like meat, which were not kosher, and that some of the meat or the taste of the meat was left on the knife and went on to this piece of chiltis plant. Now, in general, that would not prohibit something, because this is known as nosin ta'am lifgam. It's adding taste to something, but that taste is actually bad for the thing which it's being added to. If you're adding some of the fat or the oil which comes from a non-kosher meat, that would generally spoil other foods. And if that's the case, then even if it adds a little bit of taste, if it's a tiny amount, it would not forbid the kosher food. However, in this case, since the plant has such a sharp taste, there is some sort of benefit by this taste of the non-kosher meat being added to it in that it reduces its sharpness. So since it's no longer considered noisin tam lifgam, rather it is there is some benefit which comes from the taste, it is therefore forbidden. Omelach salkintis, some sort of salt which was able to be eaten by itself, but it was mixed together with other spices and often also some non-kosher fish or the fats of non-kosher meat. And so that is also forbidden. It says the Mishnah, Hari Elu Asurin, all of these things listed in this Mishnah are forbidden to eat. The Ein Asurin Asurin No, however, their prohibition is not a prohibition to benefit from the item of food, but only to eat it. Mishnah Zayin, Elu Mutorim Bachila, the following things are permitted even to eat. Cholav Shechalavi Goy, milk which was milked by a non-Jew from a kosher animal, V'Yisrael Re'ehu, and a Jew saw him all along. He was supervising him, so he can tell that the non-Jew didn't add any non-kosher milk into the mixture. The hadvash and honey which you buy from a non-Jew, we're not concerned that the non-Jew mix anything with the honey, because that spoils the honey. We're also not concerned that the non-Jew cooked the honey, because the prohibition of bishul akum, of consuming something which was cooked by a non-Jew, only applies to something which is not eaten raw as it is. But since the honey is eaten as it is even without cooking, the prohibition of bishul akum would not apply. The Hadav Devonios, there are two very different explanations for what this means. We're going to translate it as honeycombs. Afal Bisham and Nutface, even though they are dripping with some liquid, presumably honey coming from the honeycombs, we are not concerned that the liquid is coming out because some wine was poured onto the honey, and that's what's causing it to drip much more than usual. But it's not a concern. And the Mishnah adds a side point, Ein Bahem Mishum Hechsher Mashke, the honey which is dropping out of the honeycombs also does not come into the category of Hechsher Mashke. In order for something to become Tome, it has to have, at some point, come into contact with a liquid, with one of seven liquids, and one of those seven liquids is honey. There's water, wine, oil, whatever it may be. One of those seven liquids is honey. And the Mishnah is telling us that that's only in a case where the liquid honey is extracted from the honeycomb intentionally. But if you've just got a honeycomb with a little bit of honey dropping out of it, we don't view that honey as a liquid. It's part of the solid honeycomb. Just part of it is dripping down. It hasn't got the status of a liquid honey in that if something would touch it, it would still not be able to become tome until it touches a real liquid. All right, now the Mishnah returns to our list of things which are permitted. Pickled food items to which wine or vinegar never added. The toris she'inot rufa. Toris is the fish which is usually chopped up into very small pieces, so you can't tell if all of it came from a kosher animal. But if it's not chopped up, even if it's sliced into small pieces, you should still be able to tell whether it has fins and scales, whether it's a kosher fish. V'tzir, fish brine she'yesh bo dogo, which does have kilbis fish floating around in it, and that would be a proof that it comes from a kosher fish. V'oleh shel chiltis, and a leaf of the chiltis plant, which is the very sharp plant. And the previous Mishnah taught that if you have an actual piece of that plant, then it's forbidden in case the knife which was used to cut it added some taste from a non-kosher meat or something. But the leaf of this chiltis plant wasn't cut with a knife. And the same goes for the stalk of the plant. If you want to eat it, you can, because it wasn't really cut with a knife, and therefore that concern does not exist. The zeisim gluskois hamgulgolim, olives which were softened in a container and left there for a long time, in some sort of round container, until they became very soft as a result of all of the oil slowly dripping out of the olives. And that alone would make them very soft, until it became like a sort of olive cake, so to speak. Now, the point of the Mishnah is that we're not concerned that they are so soft as a result of wine being poured on them. Rather, we understand that the oil itself, which comes from there, the olives themselves, is enough to make them that soft. Now, Rabbi Yossi says, Hashluchin, if the olives are so soft that if you pick them up, the pip inside of the olive will literally be sent out of the olive. The pip will just drop out of it. That's how soft the olive has become, then Asurin. Then already those olives would be forbidden because we're concerned that wine was added on them because that is especially soft. Right, continues the Mishnah. Hachagovim aboim min aslula. Locusts, we're talking about species of locusts which are known to be kosher, but they come from the basket of a non-Jew at the front of his shop, which he uses to show the customers what they're buying, sort of the display basket. Asurin, it's forbidden to eat those locusts. because he would often pour wine onto them, onto those ones which were in the display basket, tie them in a hapsake. The locusts which come from his storage area at the back of his shop, those he wouldn't pour wine onto. He didn't know how soon he would be able to sell them, and if he poured wine onto them too early, it would spoil them if they're left in wine for a long time. So you can assume that he has not poured wine onto the locusts in the storage area of his shop, and therefore Mutarin will be permitted to eat those locusts. And the Mishnah adds a side point, V'chein l'truma. Similarly, for the laws of truma, there is a difference to food which is found at the front of a non-Jew's shop to that which is in his storage area. Truma is that which is given to a kohen, and only a kohen is allowed to eat truma. And because of that, it's worth much less than regular food, because there's a much lower demand for that, since only a few people are able to eat it. Now, food which could be truma and non-Jew is selling, we need to suspect him of perhaps pretending that it's regular food, but really it's truma, which is worth much less. That's why it would be profitable for the non-Jew. But meanwhile, it's forbidden for a Jew to eat truma if he's not a kohen. So the Mishnah is telling us that it's true that regarding the food at the front of his shop, which the non-Jew thinks he's going to sell immediately, that you need to be concerned that perhaps it's truma. But that which is found in his storage area, you don't need to be concerned that the non-Jew is pretending that it's regular food and in reality it's truma. Because the non-Jew would be too scared to do that, in case the Chachom will find out about this, and they'll punish him by either confiscating or declaring ownerless all of that truma which is in his storage area, which would be a massive amount. He would store loads in his storage area, not just the small amount which was on display at the front of his shop. So he wouldn't pretend regarding a large amount. And therefore, if you take the food from the back of the shop or in the storage area, there you can trust him that indeed it is not truma. Perigul Mishnah Aleph, the first few Mishnahs for this perek, discuss different forms and shapes which somebody might find, and whether he needs to be concerned that it is an idol, or that it was used as a decoration even, or as some ornament for the sake of Avodah Zarah worship, in which case it will be forbidden to benefit from it. Says the Mishnah, Kol Tzlamim Asurim, all forms, particular shapes, are forbidden, even if there's no particular indication that this has been worshipped, or that it is an idol, it is nevertheless forbidden, because it could be that it's only worshipped once a year. There were many idols which were worshipped only once a year. This is the opinion of Reb Meir. Just like we saw earlier on in the Masechta, Reb Meir always holds that we need to be concerned for the minority option. Even if it's not extremely probable, and there's not a majority chance that this is indeed an idol, since there is certainly a likelihood, we need to be concerned for it, and it would be forbidden to benefit from a form or an image like that, which we find, Vachom, I remember the Chachom say, Eina osor elekol tsheyesh b'yodoy, the only forms which somebody finds which would be forbidden is if it's something which has in its hand a makel, a stick, a tzipper, or if it's a form of a bird, a kadur, or a form of a ball. These were commonly used as idols of Avodah Zarah. So then one certainly does need to assume that it comes from Avodah Zarah, that it's been worshipped, and it's forbidden to benefit from it. And Mishim Ben Gamliel, Omer Mishim Ben Gamliel adds, Kol Sheyesh B'Yodoy Kol Davar, if it's a form of a person or something which has in its hand anything, not specifically a stick, but if it has anything inside of its hand, it was also commonly used for Avodah Zarah, and then you should be concerned that indeed it's been worshipped, and it's forbidden to benefit from it. But otherwise, one does not need to be concerned if it's not something which is commonly used as an idol.